Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We are so fortunate to have on a variety of guests way smarter than we are to share their industry and life expertise. Today is no different. I'm excited. We met a couple weeks ago. So, man, these intros. Graduate from FSU. Undergraduate is in psychology, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Doctorate in counseling and school psychology. Behavioral health leader who believes in hope, access, and belonging. Welcome the CEO of Here Tomorrow, Terry Andrews. I didn't stutter once on that intro.
You did amazing.
Welcome to What the Health Just Happened.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
So where do we start? One great introduction from TJ Ward. Thank you, TJ.
Yep. Shout out, TJ.
Went out to Here Tomorrow. Let's start there. What is Here Tomorrow?
Well, let's start with Gary and Joe's story. So in 2019, Joe Kenny, shout out to Joe.
Shout out, Joe.
He was working with his son who was struggling with depression. And so his son had some sort of wound on his leg that just wasn't quite healing. And he thought that he was actually going to pass away from that. They ended up getting help at Mayo. Shout out Mayo.
That's a lot of shout outs already.
And it was healed. But what ensued was Gary developed catatonia. And so really was struggling with depression, had moved out of his apartment, moved back in with Joe.
And this is father's son, just those
father's son,
aware.
Yes, yep. And was doing well. But Gary said to Joe, "Dad, I have to move out. You are my only friend, and I need to do this on my own." And so the way Joe tells the story is he knew suicide was coming, but there was nothing he could do about it. He went and sought help with the psychiatrist, tried to learn how to help Gary, but ultimately Gary moved back home, and shortly after his birthday, he had taken his life.
I'm going to kind of repeat this back to you. So Joe, father,
yep.
Gary's son,
yep.
Joe knows something is wrong. Mm-hmm. And he almost predicted it before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I have chills already. That's not good.
Yeah.
Well, and so, the story.
Yeah. And so, you know, Joe felt like he couldn't access the system, and he was a wealthy guy. He's, you know, grown businesses, sold them, shout out Commercial Fire. but he just couldn't understand the system and be able to get that access. And so
when you say system, you mean the healthcare system,
yep.
or mental health system, yeah. specifically within the healthcare umbrella.
Correct. And, you know, because, you know, despite his socioeconomic status, he was facing these barriers of how to get appointments, who to help, or, you know, who to ask for help. And what Gary, he would not go see a psychiatrist or a mental health therapist because he did not want to be Baker acted. He did not want to be put on medications, and, you know, he just didn't want to see those clinical types of folks. And so at the funeral, what Joe said is, "I'm going to, all of my knowledge from building and growing and selling these three companies, I am now going to do this again within the mental health world and create something that's a unicorn that Gary would have gone to."
What year was that when he said, when Joe said, "I'm doing this Here Tomorrow"?
2019.
What year are we in? 25? That's bad.
25.
So 2019, tragedy, which then I want to say turns into triumph, because we'll talk about stories and what you do. So
yeah.
An individual who is very successful in the professional world, mm-hmm. has a complete tragedy. I cannot think of anything worse, and says, I'm fixing this now.
Yep.
In 2019. Mm-hmm. So Here Tomorrow's founded. And let's keep hearing about that.
Yep. And so it's founded in 2020. And originally it started at Beach Church. And so Pastor Jerry Sweat and a few others like Cindy Funkhauser from Sulzbacher.
Shout out.
they had this almost like a community conversation that was occurring. And Joe started attending that. And so through it, it evolved into what we now know as Here Tomorrow. And Joe wanted to create something that, you know, again, Gary would walk in. He would easily walk in. It was an inviting space, very comforting, family living room style. And so initially they used, I think it was St. John and Partners as far as coming up with the branding and the name.
Great name, by the way.
Isn't it amazing?
Like you're here, you're going to be here tomorrow.
You know exactly what it is here tomorrow. And so, came up with some different phrases. Here tomorrow was not there yet, but they knew tomorrow was part of the phrasing. And then I don't, so, you know, through conversations, then they came up with the name Here Tomorrow.
I want to say, you said something too, so welcoming. We talked about this earlier. It's in Neptune Beach. A lot of people might call it Jack's Beach, which we've all driven by thousands of times. Great location. But the time that I came and met you, it's beautiful. It's quiet. It's welcoming. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for people to be aware where it is and the resources you provide. So what are you doing? What's the support they're providing?
Yep. So we're located at 910 3rd Street. And people are going to say, oh my gosh, I've driven by this a million times. I've never seen it. But now when you are driving down 3rd Street near Neptune, you know, be able to look at the turquoise signage that's on the west side of 3rd Street. And then you're going to be able to see that it's so, you know, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, it's right there.
Yeah.
And the way we set up the space is the living room style. The overhead lights are not on. We use lamps. We use natural lighting. We have live plants that meant a lot to Gary's mom, as well as local art. So we have local artists that are in there.
Go ahead, Trey.
How many people, if you were to check in, how many people are there at a given time? Like, so what would be the experience? Like, Eric went with me and checked me in.
I'm worried about Trey. I'm bringing him here. What's
that look like? What does he walk into?
Yeah. So the way the model works is we wanted to be able to create a space where it was easily accessible. You could just walk in. And to me, that is the most amazing, beautiful piece of this. You can just walk in right now and a peer, you know, such as Brandon would be there and greet you and take you back to what we call a conversation room and start, you know, helping you be able to to start to regulate your emotions if you're feeling in crisis or hopeless.
You use the term peers. Can you elaborate on that? The individuals that are in there and we'll say functioning as peers.
Mm-hmm. So we labeled them. Well, I shouldn't say labeled, but we titled them.
Can't say labels.
You can. And I'll explain why. I accidentally said label. So a suicide prevention specialist is the term that we use as far as their job title. And so what actual a peer is an individual that has a lived experience, in some part of, you know, from teenage to, you know, current. They do have to be within or out of 2 years of recovery to be able to seek the credential and, be employed as a peer. And that's anywhere in the state of Florida. And, you know, so we have individuals that have the lived experience. It could be mental health and or sobriety or substance use.
I think it's so relevant. Like, we'll use the business example. If somebody's selling employee benefits or health insurance. I got Joey Jansen sitting in the corner.
Shout out, Joey.
You don't want someone that's a construction worker that's providing that service and support, right? So if an organization needs that, the same reason these peers, they've lived the experience, they've gone through it, and that's just carries more weight than someone who hasn't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's something that, you know, from Brandon, he is a certified peer. And so, you know, as he tells his story, it will resonate how it's so powerful. And so the individuals come from all walks of life. You know, we've got military veteran first responders. We've got former restaurant managers. We've got regional insurance salesmen that is now with us. And so, I think it's just so powerful when somebody says, me too. You know, I've been there, Eric. I can help you overcome this.
Have you know? I mean, again, I'm a toxic optimist, right? That's one of my favorite terms. I just try to be optimistic constantly. Have you noticed an uptick in mental health problems, depression, suicidal ideation, suicide attempts in the last, we'll say 5 years, 2020?
Yeah. So I was at Baptist Health, shout out Baptist, during COVID, and I oversaw the behavior health there. And what we saw an uptick of pediatric mental health admissions was just something you can't even explain it. And so what we saw is that, you know, typically you see the statistic like 1 in 5 will experience some sort of mental health issue throughout their lifehood. Well, during COVID, and I would even say we've continued this trend, is about 1 in 3. And so, you know, 1 in 3 individuals. And, you know, with the pediatric, you know, we'll talk teenagers, COVID was extremely difficult. And it was just something that none of us would have ever imagined. But to be able to go from the sense of structure, which teenagers, as much as they don't want to admit it, structure is very good for them. you know, the structure and just the sense of community is gone, and that they're having to stay home. And so, and just be able to communicate with their friends through social media. So it's definitely been tough on the teenagers, you know, since COVID.
Yeah. Did you have something?
Yeah. How many of the people, like, I'll just maybe say teenagers, are coming in that maybe are on medications that are simultaneously dealing with depression? And does that have anything to do with the depression in itself?
So I don't quite know that answer, but I will give you an answer. So the medication isn't always the first approach for a teenager. You know, typically what we want to see is that we're trying cognitive and behavioral, you know, changes and techniques. And so, and then if that's not working, then let's look at medication.
Gotcha.
You'd mentioned, so you were at Baptist, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was your role there? I wrote it down.
I was a vice president of behavior health.
Which is...
Oh, wow.
Baptist is a very large hospital system here in Northeast Florida.
Love Baptist.
Yeah. So when was the pivot? I mean, how'd you end up at Here Tomorrow? You have this wonderful experience there. And then I have kind of a follow-up question to that.
Yeah. So what I was able to do at Baptist was really create a lot of access points and different entryways, because at Baptist, we're serving all types of mental health issues and disorders. And so not only are we helping the community, but we're also helping Baptist Primary Care. We're helping the emergency room, you know, so basically, as we often say, we were boiling the ocean. And
good
so,
luck.
But I felt like we were able to make a lot of contribution. We had wonderful community partners. I, along with Melanie Patz at the United Way, when we stood up the 988 work group, and, you know, many, many years ago when 988 was launched, and that brought all of our community partners together, and they're still meeting on a monthly basis. And so that's led by Hannah at United Way. And so I felt like I did a lot of good. But I had an opportunity to be able to run the behavior health at Walmart Health from a national level. And so I thought, hell yeah, this is it. I'm going to solve behavior health. Well, it wasn't making money, you know, because Walmart Health was primary care. They were trying to be a disruptor, which, you know,
It's not easy.
And so Walmart Health was primary care, behavior health, interestingly, dentistry. And then, of course, they still had the vision and pharmacy, which those are very successful. And the vision and pharmacy are still alive and very well, you know, they'll be fine. Interestingly, dentistry was by far their busiest service line.
So this is completely off topic, but
yes,
there's been a lot of insurance carriers that have completely left health and going all in on dental and vision, which is just kind of a bizarre trend. I don't, Joey doesn't have a mic over there. So Walmart Health, that did not quite work out how you wanted it to.
Yep.
But here you are with Here Tomorrow.
Yes. And so before I left Baptist, what I did is we used some foundation philanthropic dollars through the Baptist Foundation and worked with Joe Kenny. I had met him on some previous panels when we were talking to high school coaches at the JAG Stadium. And so Dolores Barr Weaver, thank you, Dolores.
Goodness gracious, what are you talking about, a saint?
Oh, and so she asked us to use some of our corpus earnings from her endowment to be able to work with Here Tomorrow, because she absolutely loves and supports Here Tomorrow. Thank you, Dolores. She's given us many gifts through the years. And so working with Joe, I said, let's put two peers on the unit, on the adult psychiatric unit. And so quickly crafted that up before I left Walmart, or for Walmart, put the peers on the unit. And here's some amazing statistics.
Yes, give us numbers.
So to date, we just looked at the numbers again. Now, mind you, for those that aren't in healthcare, Epic is our electronic medical record at Baptist.
I think Epic's everyone's EMR system.
Pretty
now,
much,
by the way.
Except for Memorial. They're still on Meditech. And so we've got UF, we've got Mayo, and then Baptist. And I don't know if Ascension is on Epic. But anyway, so we were able to scour the chart for 127 patients from Baptist that actually enrolled in Here Tomorrow program.
That's pretty cool.
And yes, it is cool, but here's some more statistics. So of the 127, only 16% have been readmitted
That's
by that 1 year.
That's a big stat.
That is a big stat.
I can't do the math. 127 times 0.16. Anyone got a calculator? But that's,
it's good.
Less than 20, something like that. Yeah. And so, which the state average, depending on where you're at, is anywhere between 30 and 40% readmission rate.
And that's wonderful.
And so it shows you the model's working. Now get this. Of that 127, I think 18, and we call them friends, and we can talk about friends in a minute. Of the those 18 friends that we also provided at no cost to the friend, because this entire program is no cost to the friend, 18 were enrolled in therapy. We call it funded therapy. Zero were readmitted. Zero. Isn't that amazing?
That's great. I think it's the model, too. Right, friends attached to peers that have experienced this and gone through it. Yeah. I want to go back to you. Said a couple things too. This is specific to Here Tomorrow's community relationships.
Yep.
Right. So we're talking about Northeast Florida. This is something that could be applied across the country, I believe.
Absolutely.
But locally, who are community partners? Baptist, obviously. You just had a conversation recently with HCA Memorial. Mm-hmm. Who are partners? Who are some people that maybe you aren't with yet, but like this would be a great program to implement at insert community partner?
Yeah. There's a lot of research to show the success of a peer that is embedded either in the emergency room or in a psychiatric unit. And the reason why is because it normalizes, it can be pretty traumatic being, locked in a unit and for their safety. And so the peer shows that they're able to do it, but I want to be able to explain a little bit about the peer, and that's one of the reasons why we went to suicide prevention specialists, is because with a peer, we do it completely different than what is truly defined as a peer that's certified through the state of Florida. And meaning that a peer is more of like a resource navigator. So they're going to get you from point A to point B or link you up to point A to point B. But Here Tomorrow, our model is, once you enter into our program, the suicide prevention specialist is with you for an entire year. And that is what is making this successful. So what is making us embedding into a psychiatric hospital unit is the peers are meeting individually and as groups with the patients. They're talking about their own lived experience to the patients and how there's recovery, how there's light at the end of the tunnel. And then they're also talking to them and educating them about Here Tomorrow and how we work with the patients for up to a year. So once they, that's been the success of this. And so since 2020 that we've been in operation, so we're going on our fifth anniversary.
Congrats.
Thank you. Which we're going to do a big gala.
Sign us up
in March. Yep. And March of next year. And 2,600 people have been enrolled in our program. And I would think maybe a handful have been readmitted. It's pretty small.
High success rate.
High success rate.
This is, some of these questions are so broad. Who needs to know about Here Tomorrow? And I can answer that myself, but your perspective, I immediately go to teens, parents, first responders, ex-retired military, but who is not aware of Here Tomorrow that should know about it like right now?
Everyone.
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 I love that answer.
Yeah. And because we've got to be able to get the word out, just as you said earlier, people drive by us and they haven't seen us. And so, you know,
we're going to get one of those inflatable arm guys, right?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But you know, we have people that have said that have lost a family member to suicide. I wish my family member knew about you. And so we, you know, so doing stuff like this, Eric, thank you for having us on, you know, just educating. Oh, here's a cool thing. So, I went back to, here tomorrow. I never really finished how I got there. So
you got about 4 minutes left. Oh, okay. So, okay.
Well, never mind. We'll wait on that. But, well then we'll leave with the, reconnected with the Jaguars and through some conversations
Jaguars
with them,
Foundation,
the head counsel of the Jaguars. Okay. And through conversations with her, shout out Mega.
You're crushing the shout outs,
thank
by the
you.
Way.
I know. We have these clings, a similar one that is in every single bathroom every single bathroom of the stadium.
Oh, I like
dailies
it.
And the training facility. And so
community partnerships.
There's community partnerships. And the September 7th game, we actually saw an uptick in calls after that.
Oh, wow.
Those are great examples. I'm going to rewind a second to when we said, who should know about this? You said everyone. And I love that, right? So parents, friends, clinicians, non-clinicians, Uber drivers, it doesn't matter. Like everyone mm-hmm. should be aware of this mm-hmm. and the resource that's available. So we got about 2 minutes till the first commercial break, maybe three, we'll see. Looking in the future, besides celebrating 5 years, mm-hmm. what's something you're excited for looking in the future with Here Tomorrow?
This model is scalable. And and so with my experience of, you know, even growing a restaurant brewery back in the day.
Healthy.
Yeah, not healthy. growing the behavioral health program at Baptist. And so that's my goal. That's what makes me excited, is to be able to get this into other parts of the city, other parts of Northeast Florida, but other parts of the state.
This is something that is continue to plant additional flags in Northeast Florida,
yep.
but you can plant flags in Tampa, Orlando, Miami, the middle of, I say Ocala, the middle of nowhere, and then eventually other states. Is that something that you all are considering, or is yep. that kind of putting the cart ahead of the horse?
Absolutely. Because, I mean, this...
I love the con. You're like, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Everyone.
Yeah. And then the entry point is we have to be attached to hospitals because, you know, that's an immediate pipeline. And because we're reducing emergency room admissions, we're reducing readmissions into the hospital setting. And also our partnership with 988, we get warm transfers from 988. And so us working with other 988 hubs around the state.
Did you have something?
This is so random, but does depression run rampant more in a city versus like a countryside?
Rural areas versus?
I think it can look very different.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, there's so much to cover and the time's running out, at least for this half. I forgot to mention too, it's Brennan, right? Not Brandon. Hicks in the corner, military and first responder program manager. We're going to get him on and chat a little bit too, but Terry Andrews, CEO of Here Tomorrow, wonderful human being. That's what the hell just happened. Welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. If you're catching us here on the radio show and missed the first half, good news is you can catch the whole episode on your favorite podcast or YouTube under What the Health Just Happened. It's kind of heavy, honestly. Some mental health stuff, suicide prevention. We have the CEO from Here Tomorrow. We have a second guest joining us today. Let me make sure I get this correctly. Brandon Hicks, if I say it right.
That's me.
Butchering names. Military and first responder program manager. We're going to get there, talk about that side specifically because I think it matters. But first... Healthy or not healthy?
Okay.
We like when guests think of some. Yoga. I see a yoga sticker on there.
Healthy.
Healthy? Healthy or not healthy, mixed martial arts?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I've had quite a few surgeries, so that part of it's not healthy, but it does keep you in good shape, and it does keep your brain active.
I would say if you had to pick one, it's healthy, but definitely banged up.
I would lean toward healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, going to college at Florida State?
Oh, very healthy.
Healthy?
Go yeah. Noles.
Okay. Healthy or not healthy, the feelings wheel.
Oh, healthy.
This thing's great. This might come up too. It seemed, especially for kids. But you had talked about you used it with adults as well. Mm-hmm. healthy or not healthy working in the restaurant industry?
I think I had to fight more in the restaurant industry than I did in my law enforcement career. So, yeah.
I would say it's a mixture.
There's nothing healthy about working in the restaurant industry.
You get a lot of steps in. You do that.
Well, I mean, again, you learn how to deal with people, but
yeah,
I mean, it's not healthy. It's not healthy. Yeah. Healthy or not healthy, 988.
Healthy.
Super healthy.
Super
if you don't
healthy.
Know, I'd look it up.
Yep.
Healthy or not healthy, peer-to-peer support.
Healthy.
Very healthy.
That's an easy one. Mm-hmm. You got any healthy or not healthy? Just think about it throughout the show. You don't have to say them now, but I love when people ask randomly. Anyway, so Brennan Hicks, military first responder. You used to work with JSO, then Atlantic Beach Police for yes. How many years were you at Atlantic Beach?
So I was at Atlantic Beach from 2004 to 2014.
10 years there, and then you were self-employed. I had 2014 to 2022. You were training across the United States, and what were you training?
So I was teaching Krav Maga, which is an Israeli combative system. It's often positioned as a self-defense system, which it is, but it's for higher level use of force. There is no control component to Krav Maga like there would be with judo or Brazilian jiu-jitsu, for example. So it's all pretty high level.
Who are you training when you're just trying to paint a picture. You're going throughout the United States. Is it police, military, dads who have young kids and want to be able to, God, I would get whooped. Sorry.
So when I was traveling and training, it was primarily law enforcement. Some military units would join us for those trainings. Like the Marine Security Force up in Kings Bay joined us at one time for some training, for example. A bunch of Marines, they do things a little bit differently than law enforcement does, but it's applicable to any high-level use of force situation. And people often think there's a difference between, you know, if a police officer is attacked, there's really no difference in how a police officer would respond legally or otherwise to an attack. So self-defense is self-defense, but that's where we operate in Krav Maga.
And then I want to make sure I have this correct. 2022, I think people underestimate being self-employed, traveling all the time.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. It's exhausting. You were approached by someone with Here Tomorrow or outside of, like, how'd you end up with this organization?
Yeah, shout out to Amanda Frankenfield. She's our director of peer services now. Great person with a remarkable recovery story of her own. But she met a friend of mine, Elaine, who works with Sophros Recovery, another great organization that
they
we refer
just on
out
here
to
2 weeks ago.
Shout out. Yep. And
Nick is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he crushed it.
And heck of a story. And Elaine told Amanda Amanda told Elaine they were looking to start a military and first responder suicide prevention program. Said, if you know anybody. And she said, yeah, you got to talk to this
guy.
You know, give him a call. And I certainly wasn't looking for a job. I didn't need one. You know, I hadn't been on a job interview in over 20 years. Hadn't had a boss in 10 years. So, you know, I really wasn't looking for, I had no reason to look for a regular schedule, that sort of thing. And I was playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla with my youngest son, Jude.
Great game.
And we got a phone call and I took it. And that's how I ended up Here Tomorrow.
Did you have to wear a suit to interview?
I didn't.
Good. No. Suits of the world. Yeah, did you have to create a resume to submit or no?
Yeah, no, not until after the first interview because I was kind of nonchalant about it. I wasn't in a position where there was a need for me to take the job. So I considered it more of a conversation than a job interview because I was interviewing them as much as they were interviewing me.
I love that. And this is for young professionals. That's how the best jobs are found. Mm-hmm. If somebody calls you or you hear about it, you're not job seeking, and then bam, you get this position.
Yeah.
So what's your role? I mean, again, the military and first responder side is close to heart for me, but why? What is your role day to day look like?
So the Here Tomorrow model, we offer a year of support. That is the foundation of that is peer support. People like myself who are in recovery 2+ years, sometimes for substance abuse disorders, sometimes for mental health issues, but we're all in recovery 2+ years. So we have 13 contact points throughout the year that are going to happen no matter what. We're going to make a call, but we can have more than that if the person needs more support. We also offer support groups. And the third way that we can help people, I think it's 20 or 30% of the people that we help, if my number's right, go into our funded therapy program where we actually pay for them to work with a clinician. The best thing about that is that these are vetted clinicians and our funded therapy team, Amanda and Terry for the most part, interview the friend that needs a therapist and does their best to match them up with somebody that has an appropriate skill set and experience to work with them.
So again, Here Tomorrow supports teenagers, young adults, military first responders. What's the percentage of, I mean, you could make this up if you want, I guess, first responders versus military? Is it 50-50? Is it way more first responders than military, or way more military than first responders?
Way more military for a few reasons. One, the population is significantly larger. It's about double. So we have a larger population to work with. The real reason, though, is that the military is centralized. So I was able to build relationships with the local VA hospitals. I was able to build a relationship with Naval Hospital Jacksonville. So we have kind of a central access to our veterans and our active duty military personnel. As you know, every police department and fire station is a separate entity all to itself. Mm. So to reach those populations, you have to build individual relationships with each agency and department. Those turn over. So you know how you'll have a new sheriff, you'll have a new chief. So it can be difficult to maintain those relationships once they're there.
You may talk to one sheriff 1 year, and then the next year they're not sheriff anymore.
Right.
Right. And then I look at the fire department, each station, you have to go to 52 stations in Jacksonville versus starting at the top. I never thought about that.
Yeah. So,
what do you think of your boss?
Which one?
I'm just kidding. I'm messing with her right here. Is she technically your boss or no?
She's fantastic.
Wink, wink.
No, Terry has really bolstered my confidence in the organization and the program. And not to speak ill of anyone who was there before, but Terry brings in a world of experience. She brings in a clinical knowledge while understanding that peer work is non-clinical. So she's really been able to give us some good direction on how we can integrate these two approaches.
You don't have to answer this. Can you share a little bit about your story? You'd mentioned something that was heavy. I just think it can relate to maybe someone who's going through an issue.
Sure. The foundation of peer work is lived experience. So, you know, I lived my life as a police officer. I know what it's like to go through the things that police officers go through. So when somebody comes in to talk about that, I have that experience. In my personal life, we lost our oldest boy, Tyler, to suicide in 2007. He was 18 years old. So I have a very personal connection to this mission. One of my best friends and mentors died by suicide back in 2019, on my birthday, as a matter of fact. So it just runs rampant. And when I was traveling and training first responders, I trained thousands. And my goal was to keep police officers alive on the street in the face of violent assaults. Noble goal, good mission. But I learned very quickly that we were losing a lot more to suicide than we were to those kinds of attacks. I just didn't think I had anything to offer on that front. I didn't know how to approach it. And getting involved with Here Tomorrow, I know how to approach it now. So it's been healing for me on a personal level to be able to do this work. And professionally, it's just something I never thought was going to be available. It wasn't there when I needed it. I wish it was. And one of the best things I can say about our program is I think if my boy Tyler had talked to any one of our peers, he'd be alive today.
I really appreciate you sharing that. I got chills just under these sleeves. What's the percentage? So Here Tomorrow, we're going to keep saying that over and over. Everyone needs to know about this organization. What do you think the percentage is of first responders and military versus everyone else? Is this a 50-50 thing or is it?
It's quite small.
Yeah.
And I don't know total numbers. I'm not really sure. Yes. Okay. So again, we're dealing with a much smaller segment of the population, highly specialized. So just based on the numbers alone, it's going to be smaller, but we also have some particular obstacles to overcome when we're dealing with military and first responders. Chief among those is we are often told as first responders and military personnel, reach out when you need help. But then when we do, our careers are done. We're no longer deployable. We're no longer eligible for clearance. They don't, you know, I was the assistant SWAT team leader, firearms instructor, defensive tactics instructor when I reached out. You don't want that sort of thing getting out. You know, it can just really stop your career.
Is it your coworkers? Is it your guys or girls in the room with you? Is it the superiors? Is it egos? Like the fear of reaching out?
It's all of that. And it's, you know, there was a, man, I wish I knew his name. A gentleman I saw recently talk about how we rally around a police officer who gets involved in a shooting. You know, he's injured. Maybe he's forced to take a life as part of his duty. And while he's in the hospital recovering, we rally around him. We show up every day when he's released. We line up outside and he walks through, you know, yay, glad for you. If that same police officer later on has a mental health crisis, nobody's there. So he's on his own. And for a number of reasons, you know, it can be awkward to be around somebody who's in a mental health crisis if you don't know how to talk about it and how to approach it. There is the associated stigma of, man, can this guy do the job anymore? And those are questions that are sometimes fair. You know, is somebody in a position mental health wise to do the job or not. It's a fair question. There's a lot of responsibility and a lot of weight that goes along with that. But it's also just kind of that, oh man, I don't want to be near that. You know, it's almost like an infectious disease where oftentimes people just don't want to be around it.
You remember early on in COVID where like everybody stayed away from each other?
Sure.
And then it was like, all right, whatever, let's all be around each other. How do we get to that point where it's okay to be around this?
We got to talk about it.
Yeah.
We have to have the conversations, and it's got to start, you know, one thing at a time. And that's really what we do. You know, when I go around and I talk to military personnel, police, fire, corrections, we have these conversations. And when I can go on a show like this and talk about my story, when we can have others share their story, not just of what was the struggle? What did recovery look like? And what does health and wellness look like today? And that's the big picture that I think we need to paint to draw people into this.
I'll ask you the same question I asked her, and I know the answer. Who should know about this?
Oh, everyone.
Everyone. You know, that's the best answer I've ever got on the show.
My team focuses on military and first responders, but we also work with people who were not in that line of work. So if there's a parent who's lost a child, of course I'm going to help that parent. Yep. Why in the world would I not do that? There are... maybe people we work with experiencing postpartum depression, and maybe somebody on my team has dealt with that. So we're going to help that person as well.
This is the topic change. We say healthy or not healthy cell phones, mainly social media too. Like, what are you seeing? How much does that impact? Definitely the younger generation.
But I think
that's everyone now too. They catch themselves doom scrolling or spending too much time on it.
Take a swing at that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I just made a post about this on social media the other day after some recent events. Social media can be a real force for good. It can be a real positive thing. But I think when you look at how much it magnifies negativity and division and separation, I think that can be really damaging. What I suggest to people is don't let yourself believe that social media is real life, or that the terrible comments that you see in response to any one thing, don't think that's real life. You know, when we get out and we work with our fellow citizens, our neighbors, and we put our boots on the ground, we have people here tomorrow from all different political backgrounds, religions, races, ethnicities, and we work together just fine toward a common goal. And I think that's where real life is. And I think we need to get away from that negative aspect of social media.
Would you add to that?
One of the trainings that I do is
you're coming back on.
One of the trainings I do is called Trust-Based Relational Intervention, TBRI. Shout out Hope Street Jacks. In that training, we talk about a number of different concepts, but one is I talk to them about cell phones with children, and what I recommend is that. By age 12, that's probably where you should be getting them some sort of cell phone. So removing the iPad, removing the cell phones with toddlers, not giving that. And because what we see in research is the impacts that it has starting in early, you know, teen years is so significant on mental health.
There's a couple things. One, I have a love-hate relationship with social media. I just want to watch golf, bloopers, woodworking, fishing, but other stuff comes on, right? And you say garbage in, garbage out. For this show, I guess where we struggle, I just don't want to be on social media posting and commenting, but you have to. It's a tool and can be used for good to distribute information. What's frustrating is it's really a small percentage of the population that's toxic, but sometimes they're the loudest and on those keyboard warriors most often.
Sure.
Great answer, by the way. My goodness.
Yeah. With us being on social media, there can be, you know, those bouts of bullying, and no matter what age. And so, you know, being able to understand how the individual is being impacted that's in your life, you know, that's so important. You know, are they making statements? Are they saying things like, I don't know, you know, what it means to go on anymore, or, you know, this world is so hateful to me, or, you know, and so sometimes these statements are made, but we don't always hear them. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what we're trying to do with the teen program is really help parents understand what these statements are. And for the parents to also see you know, peers that are adults that have children. Because I think that it's not always the behaviors. It's, you know, sometimes it's the statements that are being made.
You'd mentioned the teen program. Do you all collaborate with schools, like high schools and middle schools locally?
We do. We work with the, so we have outreach coordinators that go out and meet with the counselors of the schools, okay, and the therapists of the schools, and like the full service schools and whatnot, and be able to, you know, leave our information so that they can give it to the teens there. We also get, believe it or not, teens call 988, and we get transfers from 988 to be able to continue working with the teens.
I love that too. So 988, what is that? Because we've said it a couple times. For those that aren't aware, what is 988?
So 988 is a national call center that is similar to 911, but it's the 911 for mental health issues. And what's been amazing about 988 here locally is, and you can call it 24 hours a day, is a lot of folks are calling it asking for resources. Yep. So it really highlights someone like Joe, where you heard his story earlier, that really didn't know how to navigate and, you know, use.
Where do I go? Who do I talk to?
Exactly. Right. And so 988 has been very helpful. And shout out to 988, because the success rate of them de-escalating the situation and getting them over to Here Tomorrow is significant. And the times that they've actually had to call 911 to intervene is like less than 1% out of the thousands of calls that they get.
I've got young kids, 10, 9, and 7. They know what 911 is. And God, I hope I don't have to teach them what 988 is. But I think...
No, you need to.
I'm putting it on the phone list at the house. We have certain numbers. I'm going to give them Joey's phone number so my kids just call him randomly, by the way. But 988 should be on the list. Yes. Like, as much as people talk about 911, I think 988 should be just...
Yeah, they did a good job of... Because it used to be a 1-800 number. Nobody could ever remember. Oh, I mean, it wasn't even a number that, you know... you could remember. So now 988 is perfect, but believe it or not, a lot of people still don't know about 988. So this is good. We're talking about it.
Until, like, doing this research, I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot about this. But there are, like you said, wonderful organizations in Northeast Florida. You talked about the scalability. So I asked her some similar questions the first half. If you look at 1-5 years, like, what are some healthy changes you foresee coming? Maybe it's with Here Tomorrow, but just in general.
So there are a couple things that I recognize are changing from even my time, which wasn't that long ago, just in law enforcement, for example. JSO now has a wellness division. You have a homicide division, you have a burglar division, now they have a wellness division, right? And so some of that encompasses how we interact with the citizenry. Some of that is like a co-responder program. Mm-hmm. If you have a mental health crisis now, they don't just send a police officer to go deal with your mental health crisis. I tried to do my best and others did, but we weren't well trained. And now they have a mental health professional to go with the police officer. So I think that's one change that's really important. The biggest change I think I would like to see coming up, and I'm doing a little bit of work right now in its infancy to push toward that, is a cultural change for our first responders where we talk about mental health openly and honestly in police academy and fire academies and corrections academies. I hope there's more of that in the military as well, but you know, the military has some other resources that are useful for that. But I think if we're going to see a cultural change, it's got to start on day one. It's got to start at the academy level where we recognize that we can have a conversation about this. Kind of like with your kids knowing 988, my kids have now grown up in a household where we openly talk about not just mental health, but recovery, what that looks like. And my kids are very comfortable having these conversations. I think we can get there with everybody.
It's like normalizing the conversation, which I think has started. If you look 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't talked about, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just normalizing it. We talked about on the commercial break, a grassroots effort, mm-hmm, right? You can't change this massive flaw in healthcare. It's got to start locally and small, but it's scalable.
Mm-hmm. It is.
How do you get peers? How do you find them? Are they calling you? I mean, if you're looking, when do you know you need more peers?
Well, we have a couple job postings right now.
So you hear that?
Anybody wants to go?
How we
if anybody
get them
wants
is
to check it out.
Primarily magic and sorcery.
Wizards, unicorns. We're talking about unicorns earlier.
So imagine you've got to find somebody who's in recovery 2+ years, right? Now that person needs to be a police officer, a firefighter, a marine, a soldier, an airman. That shrinks the population further. Now they have to be willing to talk about it publicly and openly and transparently. That shrinks the population further. So it's a bit of a trick finding somebody who fits all of those criteria. So when we put somebody in a seat, we didn't just hire them because we needed to fill a spot. We'll wait however long we need to wait until we find the right person to put in that seat.
Very specific criteria, which is good. You can't just hire.
Well, and for the teen program, it has to be someone under the age of 30 that has experienced mental health during their teenage years.
So I want to try to repeat this back. If you're on the teenage side, you have to be under 30. Mm-hmm. I don't check that box. What was the other criteria?
And experience mental health during their teenage years.
So someone could be 28 years old and have not experienced mental health until their mid-20s, and that doesn't qualify them because they didn't have it in the teens?
That's correct.
Yeah. Listen up, you people under 30. Yeah. And then the same thing on the military side, that just gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
It does. Yeah. And there's stigma everywhere in many different, in many different demographics. But as I said, it is particularly difficult to overcome, especially for our active personnel, because it can really just destroy your career. And there have been too many leaks and too many things that were shared that shouldn't have been shared that have damaged the people that we're working with, somebody said the other day, it's like feeding a deer in the forest. You have to get the deer to come a little closer each time, and get it used to you and get it to know that it can trust you. So when I go
That's a good metaphor, by the way.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I forget who said, was it you?
Was it Jay? I should take credit.
Yeah, just say it was you. Yeah. Nobody knows.
I think it might have been Jay Bond, our adult peer team manager, who's just a phenomenal human with a phenomenal recovery story. Shout out to Jay. But that's really it, because when I go talk to military and first responders, they're not going to trust here tomorrow. They're just not going to do it. But they might trust me, if I can tell them where I've been, what I've been through, and that we have some shared experience.
Well, and I think it's important, too, for those that are listening, we have what we call a closed system, meaning that no one from the outside world, no hospital system, no one from law enforcement, they can access our system. So it's a completely closed system.
Right. And if the Commandant of the Marine Corps calls and says, hey, I heard you're working with so-and-so, we're going to say, who? Never heard of him. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Commandant.
That's good.
Yeah.
Any last-minute shout-outs before we wrap it up? Hi, Mom. Love you. Sorry.
Hi, Mom.
No, I don't think so. I would say a shout out to all my brothers and sisters who are first responders, all of those who are serving right now. A shout out to you guys. Here Tomorrow is absolutely there to help anyone and everyone who needs help. But guys, we see you. We know what you're doing. We know what you've been through. And we would love the opportunity to help.
And I think I'll close with one of the things I like to do is a call to action. And so for those that are listening, think about somebody that you haven't talked to in a long time. And they just come across your mind. And so what I want you to do, and this is even for you guys too,
I love this.
Your homework is to reach out to them.
Someone you haven't talked to. I just had this yesterday, a guy I hadn't talked to in 10 years from college who was in the Marine. He's doing wonderful, by the way. Shout out, Nate. Yesterday that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Love this.
But you would be it's so amazing to be able to see how that impacts that individual for that day. And it can even be just a simple text. And so it'll be like, hey, Eric, I was just thinking about you. Hope your day is going well. And it's what we call a non-demanding, caring contact.
Wonderful conversation. I hate when we run out of time, but I'm getting you two back for sure. Introductions coming up. We have CEO of Here Tomorrow, Terry Andrews, and military and first responder program manager, Brandon Hicks, both with Here Tomorrow. That's what the hell just happened.